welcome back. Welcome back. It's great to get back into learning with everyone. I hope everybody had a great, feels like Pesach was ages ago, but when you had Pesach, I hope it was very good. So this morning I couldn't help myself, because one of the fellows in the Kollel, when we came back from Pesach, I don't know how it came up in conversation, he mentioned this book that he got a hold of called A History of the World in Six Glasses. So the minute I heard this book, I was like, oh, I don't know where this is going, but this could be something good. So I went on to the Kindle, which is where now I find a lot of good things. So I found this book by Tom Standage. I have no idea who he is. I'm not giving him any askamas. I'm just telling you what I found. He is a New York Times best-selling author of several volumes, including the one that you see pictured on the front, top left, called A History of the World in Six Glasses. So I didn't read the whole book last week because there was no time for that. But I did take a look at a little snippet that they're kind enough to give you for free on this thing. So he introduces his idea, which is that he thinks that six beverages chart the flow of world history. Now, if you're a historian, somebody who's interested like me in history, you think this is pretty cool. Now, I haven't had a chance to read the book. It'll probably have to wait till the summer because I'm not going to have time to read till then. But he suggests that the cultures that developed over time developed along the path of these six beverages. He starts talking about beer, which began by the gathering culture, when people moved from wandering hunters to gatherers and they had storehouses full of grain. Some of that became used for beer. And apparently he connects this to some early documents that says that actually rations were paid in bread and beer. I know some people whose rations are paid in beer also. The flourishing culture, it says then, of the ancient city-states of Greece spawned thinking and philosophy, politics and poetry, and formal drinking parties, which then featured not beer, but wine. The rebirth of Western thought, he suggests, over time drives a worldwide trade boom, and global sea routes were established, and a new range of beverages came in by Arab scholars, distilled drinks, so whiskey and schnapps and things like that. Hard on the heels of this geographic expansion came an intellectual expansion, which was coffee in coffee shops and coffee houses. And then the clarity of thought with coffee, I guess, for some people, more or less. Soon it was, by the British Empire, it was the drink of tea. Finally, he moves to the 19th, 20th, and 21st centuries, which is dominated by one drink which he thinks captures the essence of American cosmopolitan, and there you go, Coca-Cola. So he traces the whole history of the world through six drinks. So I thought this was fascinating. I thought it was really fascinating. So I was thinking, oh, so what if we looked at these six drinks in the light of halacha? What do we have to say about these six drinks? So there's a lot to say, actually, so we're not going to have time for everything. But I wanted to do a quick snapshot of what I see when I think of the six drinks that animate our halachic world. So I guess this is halachic man meets coffee shop drinker, or something like that. So to do that, I want to start with the one drink that he doesn't mention, and that is water. He starts talking about water, but he doesn't mention water as one of his beverages. And al pi halacha, there's a very good reason why he doesn't mention that. See, on the one hand, we learn a lot from water. There is a very wonderful mashgiach in Keren B'Yavne. His name is Rav Avram Rivlin. So he once pointed out, I remember in a sicha, he made a simple observation, that the things that are most important to us in life come furnished by God in the greatest quantity and in the least cost. It's a simple point. Chavod, there's a chair right here. It's a simple.
You come late, you get stuck with a chair.
It's a simple point, but it's actually very profound. The Rav Shalom created that air. You can't live without air. Air is plentiful, and in most places it's free. Water, the water bill that we get in the house is very minor compared to the bill that you get from the jeweler before Yontif for something, or before a birthday. So jewelry, I think, you can live without. That's being recorded, but all right. But water you can't live without. So it's interesting that the way the Rav Shalom created the world is that the things that most people really need at the most basic level are the most plentiful. That's just a general observation about water. Most of our world is water. Most of our bodies are water. And most of the fruits that we eat and drink, the vegetables, are water. Right? Anybody try making a zucchini kugel? So you make a zucchini kugel, you put 47 zucchinis in the pot, you boil it up, and what are you left with? 1 inch. Why? Because it's mostly water. The vegetables are mostly water. The fruits are mostly water. But the truth is that water is not a drink. It's not a drink. Now, how do I know that water is not a drink? Well, here's a litmus test. The pasuk says in Parshas Re'eh that there is a mitzvah called Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni means you take a certain group of fruits in the first and second year, and then the fourth and fifth year of your seven-year Shemitah cycle, and you bring them to Yerushalayim to eat there. Well, what happens if you live somewhere, you know, in Nahariya or somewhere else far out? You live in the Galil, and it's going to take you too long. And you're not a date farmer where the dates can stay. You're some kind of other farmer where the vegetables or the fruits, in this case, the fruits, the shivas, I mean, the grains that you're growing, they're not going to last. So what do? So there's a process that the Chumash calls chilul, where you take the fruit, and through a specific halachic transaction, you transmit the kedusha of Maaser Sheni from this fruit to the money. And then a pasuk says, v'tzarta kesa b'yadcha, you take the cash in your pocket, you go to Yerushalayim, and you buy food. And you can buy any kind of food that you like. But, says the Mishnah, source number one, halokeach mayim umelach uperos hamuchubarim lakarka, if you buy with your money that you have with the sanctity of Maaser Sheni, you buy water or salt, uperos hamuchubarim lakarka, fruit that's still attached to the ground, meaning it's not really food right now, it's still vegetation. Or you buy foodstuffs that's not going to make it to Yerushalayim. So you've essentially undone the whole purpose of transacting the kedusha from the food to the money. Lo kana maaser. The sanctity of the money doesn't move to the water. Why? Because water is not a food. And salt is not a food. It's something that we ingest, but it's not a beverage. Therefore, because it's not a beverage, you can't say that it's a food that Maaser Sheni is chal on it.
So you mean there's no nutritional value to it?
That's a good question. I'm not sure what I mean, actually. I don't know if it's because there's no nutrition. Let me give you another example right now of why water is not a normal food. Obviously, it has some sustaining quality of sorts. You can't live... a person, Rachmana Litzlan, if a person was starving, they could last a lot longer without food than they could without water. But I'm not sure. It's just interesting that the halacha recognizes that water is different than every other beverage. That's what we're going to see now again. The Shulchan Aruch in Source 2, and this is something maybe we'll do a little bit of methodology, which we don't have sometimes the occasion to do. This is a good example. We'll see several examples of the Shulchan Aruch over the course of this year, so I just want to make sure everybody's familiar. Now that we're in our new eco-friendly Mar Makomos, you can't unfortunately get the full Tzuras Hadaf, which I still bemoan that fact, but I'm going along with the eco-friendly people. So if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, just important to understand how, you know, you ask the Rabbi Ishaila, how does he come up with these answers that he gives you? Where does he get it from? So, well, our Jewish law is codified in this large volume, that was a beautiful new set that was just donated to the shul. So the centerpiece of every page of Shulchan Aruch is this section, authored by Rabbi Yosef Karo, who lived at the end of the 16th century. He, as a child, was exiled from Spain and made his way in a circuitous way until he landed in Tzfat. He wrote also his commentary on the Rambam called the Kesef Mishnah, commentary on the tour, Rav Yaakov and Asher called Beis Yosef, and he authored the Shulchan Aruch. This became the code of Jewish law accepted all over the place. Then, in the inside of it, you'll see, you can't see it from the back, but you have the Rashi script, which is the glosses of Rabbeinu Moshe Isserles, who lived in Krakow, and way end of the 1500s, beginning of the 17th century. So he added glosses, which are essentially the foundation for Ashkenazi Psak. Usually, if the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, doesn't take on the Shulchan Aruch, so then we follow the Shulchan Aruch. But when there's a dispute, those who are Ashkenazi, we're going to follow what the Ramah writes. He's living in Krakow. He tells us what the practice was in Poland. Now, on every volume of Jewish work, of Jewish scholarship that looks like this, where you have an inside commentary and an outside commentary, the inside commentary is always the more senior commentary. That's why Rashi is on the inside of the Talmud and Tosafos is on the outside. So on the inside of every Shulchan Aruch, an Orach Chaim, there's four sections of Shulchan Aruch. There's Orach Chaim, Yoredeia, Evan Ezra, and Choshen Mishpat. The first one deals with daily life. Yoredeia deals with mitzvos, Isser, and Heter, which we'll talk about in a little bit. The third one, Evan HaEzer, deals with marital law, divorce, and Yibum, and Chalitza, and Pru Ravu. And the last one, Choshen Mishpat, deals with commercial transactions. The inside is the Taz, Reb David HaLevi. He was the son-in-law of another great scholar known as the Bach. The Bias Chadash is a commentary in the early 1600s. On his father-in-law wrote a commentary on the Tur, which preceded the Shulchan Aruch. He has the early commentary here. His life story is a very interesting one. He lived as a very poor man, and the Balabatim of his shul chased him out because someone accused him of something which was false. It's a whole interesting story. He didn't have the easiest life. And then on the other side of the equation here, a little bit later in the middle, so in the Yoredeia you have what's called the Shach. The Shach is Reb Shabsai Cohen, who lived in the middle of the 1600s, who ran away from the Chmelnitsky massacres and wrote a very interesting monograph called Megillas Eifa, which we once talked about on Tisha B'Av, I think, 1 or 2 years ago, about his experience running away from the Chmelnitsky massacres in 1648. But in the Orach Chaim, he didn't write on Orach Chaim. He only wrote on Shulchan Aruch Yoredeia. On this side, you have what's called the Mogen Avram, Rav Avram Abelo Gombiner, also Ashkenazi commentary, later than the Taz in the 1600s. And then on the bottom, you have several super commentaries. So you have one super commentary called the Machzis HaShekel, that's a super commentary on Rav Avram Abelo Gombiner on the Mogen Avram. Then you have a double-headed super commentary by Rav Yosef Teumim, known as the Prima Gadim, who wrote a super commentary on both, the Taz on this side and on the Shach. And then you fill it in the middle, you have what's called the Ber Hetev. The Ber Hetev usually does mostly a summary of the Shach, of the Taz and the Mogen Avram. The Ber Hetev was authored in the 18th century, in the 1700s, by, his name was, he's not such a famous person as an individual. What was his name? I don't even remember his name. Rabbi Yehuda Ashkenazi of Tiktin. Tiktin was a city in Poland. Yes. Oh, there you go. So there are many famous rabbonim from Tiktin. Many famous rabbonim from Tiktin. This is very old. This is 18th century Tiktin, Rabbi Yehuda Ashkenazi. And then there's another commentary that you'll usually find here called the Shari Tshuva. So anyway, we're going to keep referring to the Shulchan Aruch. So this is just kind of a history lesson on one foot of what we look at when we open the book to know what we're talking about. So the Shulchan Aruch says in source number 2, Hashos semayim litzma'o, someone who drinks water from thirst, mevarach shahakol, he breaks the bracha of shahakol. Ula achrav, and after they finish drinking their glass of water, vorei nefashos rabos, you make a bracha of vorei nefashos. But, says the second line in the Shulchan Aruch, avol, im chanakte umtza, if he's choking on a piece of meat, and he drinks water just to get it down out of his throat, you don't make a bracha. Now, let's fast forward a couple hundred years after the Shulchan Aruch, in the latter half of the 18th century.
But let's say you're eating a meal. In a normal meal, you make a motzi, and you cover everything. So why shouldn't that something that you make a special drink during the meal? course of a meal.
Great. So the answer to your question is that he's talking out of the context of a meal. In a hanami, in the context of a meal, you wouldn't make any bracha anyway. But
why,
let's say...
Why are you eating a piece of meat then? Out of clear blue?
Yeah, what do you mean? It's everybody's sleeping in the house. It's 10:30 at night. I'm rummaging through the fridge. What do you mean? Why am I eating a piece of meat? Like, what? I don't understand what the shaila is. So maybe the meat would cover the water. Maybe it wouldn't. If the water's in front of you and you see it, it's going to cover you. But I'll give you a more practical example. You wake up in the morning and you have to take a piece of a pill. Medication. So what's the din? So we fast forward now to the end of the 19th century, to the 1800s, and we move to Radin. Radin is a tiny nothing of a town, but Klape Shmaya in heaven, Radin is a very important city. Because Radin was the home of Rav Yisrael Meir Kagan, the Chafetz Chaim, where he had a yeshiva, and he had a little shop, which is how he earned a living. And he was the editor of a multi-volume, a six-volume work on Orach Chaim called the Mishneh Brura. The Chafetz Chaim did not write the Mishneh Brura. He edited the Mishneh Brura. So once in a long, long while, you'll find Poskim will say, oh, well, there seems to be a stira between one comment in the Mishneh Brura and the other. The Chafetz Chaim didn't write it, he edited it. So the Chafetz Chaim wrote a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. So what they did was they reprinted the Shulchan Aruch. They kept the Ber Heitev because the Ber Heitev summarizes many of the comments of the Magen Avraham and of the Taz. So that's a they kept. Why they also kept the Shaarei Tshuva, I'm not sure why they did. Then they published what's called the Mishneh Brura, which is the classic commentary of the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim died in the early 1930s. He was 101 or 103, nobody knows exactly, but his obituary featured in the New York Times, which I have a copy at home. It's very interesting. He wrote the Mishneh Brura, and then he wrote in the far corner, in the even smaller letters, called the Bir Halacha, which is where he further expands on some of the ideas that he has in the Mishneh Brura. So he raises the question that somebody raised here, and he suggests that Chanak Te'umtza isn't just if you happen to be choking, but he says, if there's any reason that you're drinking, not for the purpose of quenching your thirst. So he says, sometimes you'll drink for another reason, but it's also thirst-quenching. But we know, let's say if I just had a drink, and then I realized I forgot to take my medication. So I'm absolutely not thirsty at all. So in that case, you don't make a bracha. What would be the din if you had a cup of orange juice? I'm not thirsty at all. I'm not thirsty, but I have to take my medication, and I have orange juice. So the din is, when you drink orange juice, you make a bracha. Any other drink, aside from water, you'll make a bracha, even if you just drink it to take a pill. Even if you just drink it to you have a cough or something. You need it. So what do you see from here? You see that mayim, water, doesn't have the din of a regular mashke. Apparently, the enjoyment of water comes from the thirst quenching of it. Of the tsma'on, of this thirst that is quenched when you drink it. But if you're absolutely not thirsty at all, so then you don't make a bracha on water. So this is another example of how water is different. But what's interesting to me is that it'll play in a backhanded way in a different area of halacha. Let's say, the Gemara says, let's say I have water and I cook vegetables in the water. So now my water is not water, it's soup. So the Gemara says that if you have soup that you cooked with water, you make whatever bracha you would have made on the vegetables, you make on the water. Because the water is now transformed to the taste of the vegetables. But, asks the Gemara, what if I take an orange and I squeeze it out, and now I have that in a glass? What bracha do I make? Says the Shulchan Aruch, in source 3, Im sachtan, eino mevarech al osam mashkim, ella shahakol. If I squeeze out an orange, I only make the bracha of shahakol niyevidvaro. What's that? Shahakol. Why do I make a shahakol? So look in the Gemara, in source 4. Hi, Rav Ashi. It says Rav Ashi. Hi, it's actually Marbar Rav Ashi. Hi, duvsha tetamri. This sweet, they called it devash, this honey that comes from the tamarim, mevorchen alave, you make a bracha on it, shahakal niyevedvaro. My taima, It came from a date, from a tamar. A tamar is borei pri ha'etz. So why do I make shahakol on devash tamarim? Says the Gemara, a very interesting line. My taima zeya ba'almahu. It is only shvitz. It's only sweat. What does the Gemara mean when it says it's only sweat? I think the Gemara means like this. If I take an orange and I cut it and I squeeze it out, what am I squeezing out? Am I squeezing out orange? No. Really, there are two things. If I'm wearing my halakhic goggles, I see there's orange and I see there's water. The orange is essentially just saturated with lots and lots and lots of water. So therefore, the Gemara views it that when you have vegetables that are not cooked, the liquid that you're squeezing out of there is only zeya, it's shvitz. Why is it that the Gemara calls it shvitz? Because what happens when I perspire? The liquid in my body, the water in my body comes out. So that's the Gemara's analogy, that when I drink the orange juice, even if it's not from concentrate, even if it's fresh squeezed orange juice, since I'm squeezing it out and what I'm really getting is the water from inside, even though if I would have cooked the water with the juice, I would say, borei pri ha'etz, but since I didn't cook it, I just squeezed it out, I say shahakol nieh bedvaro. So that's another example of how water actually is manifest. You're making a bracha on the water because the water is independent quality.
Is that only the no pulp orange juice?
No, so I think, that's taka good shiloh. That's a great shiloh.
What about Tang?
So I looked in the Mishnah Berurah. I looked in the Mishnah Berurah on the next sif to see what he thinks about pulp orange juice. So the Mishnah Berurah on the next sif, because the next sif in Shulchan Aruch says the following. Let's say I have an orange and I cut it up into long. L'chatichos ketanos, little pieces. So what bracha do I make on that? I make borei pri ha'etz. So Mishnah Berurah says, why? He says, kevon shenikar adayin ta'aron v'tzurason v'mikzas. Since the shape and the appearance still looks like an orange. If I take an orange, I cut up little pieces. But the pulp in the drink, it's not nikar, that it's an orange. It's just kind of a thicker beverage. Memela, I think it's clear that according to the Mishnah Berurah, you would make a shahakal on regular orange juice and also the heavy pulp grove stand orange juice. Because it's not nikar tsuroso. It's not tatikos chatzim. You didn't cut it. It's like really, really blenderized. Anyways, I was wondering the same thing. I think that's what
so
it says.
So most orange juice today is pasteurized. So does that qualify
that's a great
cooking?
That's a great question. So I was wondering the same thing. I didn't see the Mishnah Berurah doesn't talk about that. I could probably look, maybe there's some more contemporary poskim. It's not a joke, because the din of pasteurizing does have ramifications in halacha in many different contexts. Potentially for example, stam yenam being pasteurized.
You're cooking sweat.
But that's,
you're cooking sweat.
Right. That's a good point. Meaning, they're going to pasteurize it after they've removed the actual body of the fruit. So then in that case, it would for sure still retain the bracha of shakal. That's a good question. I would assume that's correct, but I didn't see anybody, maybe one of the more contemporary poskim talks about it. So now that we've talked about, we have to move to why this dvash tamarim is bracha of shahakol. If I have my tamar and I squeeze it out, I make a bracha of shahakol. So look at Tosvos. Tosvos lives, it's a group of scholars who are living in the early 13th century in France. So Tosvos, in that Gemara, in Brachos, he observes the following, and this will be the transition to our first of our beverages. He says, V'chein mashkin mikol mine peros. So too, not just date honey, but any beverage of any, like shahakol of an orange juice. Bar, except for tirosh v'yitzar, except for wine and oil, kedamrina gabe orla. I didn't get into the Gemara, has a very fascinating raya, a proof that that when you drink orange juice, it's only water. Ulafuke mahalachas gedolos, against the opinion of the Baal halachas gedolos, shepirish demirish and oslan sochan mayim. I want to stay away from that opinion for the moment. So now asks the Tosas a great question. He says, v'shechar didon. Our beer. What do you say? What bracha do you say on beer? Well, we say shahakol on beer. The question is why? Well, what do you do? How do you make beer? From hops and barley or
rye
or grain, some other grain. So here's an interesting question that Tosfos is going to get to. The Gemara says in Brachos, let's say I have a chalent. I have a chalent, it has meat, it has potatoes, it has barley, and it has a few beans in it. But the beans, everything is all mixed together. Or I have cornbread. The cornbread is 80% corn flour, let's say. It's not really, but let's say it were. And 20% wheat flour. So what bracha do you make on that? So usually when you have a mixture, you follow the majority. But in the case of the five major grains, anytime they play a role in your food, as long as it's not an ancillary role, what's called ledevik balma, just to stick together, if that's an ingredient, you always make borei minim zomers. So if I have cornbread, 80% corn, 20% wheat, I make a bracha of borei minim zomers. Same thing, I'm going to make a bracha of borei minim zomers on my chalent, because even though the barley is a little bit, but it's mixed all through the chalent. Wait a second. I'm thinking, when it comes to my beer, number one, I'm cooking. So the Gemara said, right, when you cook vegetables with water, so you make the bracha on the vegetable, you say the same bracha of Bori Priho Adama on the liquid part, on the soup part. And number two, it's made with grains. So shouldn't we say, well, if it has grains in the ingredients, we should make a bracha of Bori Minei Mizonos on our beer? That's Tosa's question. So Tosa says, V'sheichar didan, our beer, afal gav, even though deshema yesh bem kezayis bechadei achilas pras, they must have had some really fascinating beer because they had actual barley that they were eating as they drank the beer. I don't know if there's any beer on the market like that has barley in the bottle. He says, nonetheless, lo mevarchin alav bori minei mizonos ela shahakol. You don't make bracha of mizonos on beer. Va'afilu l'Rav and Shmuel, even for Rav and Shmuel, who we said before, Da'ami who say, kol sheyesh bo mechamesha saminim, anything that has from the five grains, mevarach and olav, bo minim zonos, make a bracha bo minim zonos. Why? Hacha lo have behu chamesh me. What's that? Mamish so'orim. Tosas is going to give you now three different answers why you make a shahakol on beer. Number one, lo have behu mamish so'orim. Tosfos says, yeah, maybe you had a little bit of barley in your beer, but it's ground up. And it's so fine that it's not mamushus of barley, number one. Number two, ve'ein sheikhar ela taima ba'alma. The beer is for the barley is for the taste. And then he says, va'od mishum sheyesh bo iluya achrina bepas. Number three is that the barley actually has another upgrade in bread, and therefore in this context it's not significant. Va'od, and the fourth reason that Tosfos gives, the last line on source five, bishtia omer shahakol. Period. When you drink a beverage, it's categorically shahakol. So Tosfos gave us four different explanations when we move on to the first of our beverages. Why is beer shahakol? Either because the barley is not there in its full form, and today it's certainly the case. Nachum and I went last summer, we went on vacation to Milwaukee, which is a very nice Midwestern city, and we went on a tour of the beer factory. So, the truth is, I don't drink beer, I don't like beer. When they had at the end, they had a tasting, I had Coke, it was very delicious. But I don't drink beer, it's not something that I enjoy. So they explained to you how they make all the beer. You don't get any barley in your beer. They make sure that there's no sediment left. They take it all out there. So Tosfos says, so number one, there's no barley left in your beer. And number two, he says, is shtia. It's a beverage. People drink cold beer as a part of their, you know, barbecue or wherever they're drinking cold beer. It's a beverage. So he says, a beverage by definition, even though it has a component of borei minim zonos in it, it's going to be shahakol on the evidvaro. So we've moved from water to beer. But beer, it's a tricky halachic substance. It's a very tricky topic, beer. This halacha is not well known at all, but it is a beferish din, an explicit din in Shulchan Aruch. And that is what's called Sheikhar Akum, beer of non-Jews. I'm not sure who are the beer drinkers in the room, but hold on to your seats.
I have to leave, yeah.
Shechar Akum.
I have to leave.
Beer from non-Jews. Growing up, I never heard of this din.
There's no such thing as kosher beer, per se.
Unless in Israel.
The grains are...
Okay.
Well, we'll see right here. Says the Shulchan Aruch, very interesting. There is a din. It appears right next to the dinim of Bishul Akum and Pas Akum. You can have foods that are completely kosher. They're totally kosher. But if they're manufactured by non-Jews, the rabbis put them on the no-go list. And that's why there are so many things that require hashgacha, even though all the ingredients are kosher. So, right after that, you find the din of Shechar Akum, which, if we understand that a major force and the reason why the rabbis prohibited foods cooked and created by non-Jews was because, I think we maybe spoke about this once last year, because of chasnus, because of crossing inappropriate social boundaries. That leads us to the next siman in Shulchan Aruch and Yoredeya in 114, number 1, source 6. Kol Shechar Shel Ovid Kochavim Echad Shechar Shel Tamarim, whether it's date beer, O Shel Te'enim, or it's fig beer, O Shel Se'orim, or it's barley beer, O Shel Tvua, or grain beer, O Shel Tvash, or it's honey beer, Aser Mishum Chasnus. You're not allowed to drink it because of concerns over intermarriage. What's that? That's right. It could lead to dancing. Could lead to who knows what. Whatever. All comments about the Secret Service will then be... some jokes need to be left under the table. So says the Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed to drink beer that's manufactured by Goyim. Period. That's the din. Now, the Shulchan Aruch gives you two important caveats. Number one, Ve'eno Aser, it's only Aser, Ela B'makom Mechiraso. It's Aser if you drink it in the place where it's sold, in a pub. If I buy beer at the convenience store and I drink it home, bring it home to my house, the Shulchan Aruch says, that's not a Mishum Chasnus, but if I go to a bar and I'm drinking beer, that's a problem. Then he says, why? She'ikar akzera shema yisod etzlo, maybe you'll come to dine with him, v'lo asru, and he says, elo kishe kovea atzmo lishtos, kederech she'odom kovea bishtia. And the second thing he says is, it's only usher if you set yourself to drink there with a kvius, with a certain settled nature. Aval im nichnas beveis ovi kochavim, you happen to pass by, v'shasa derech arai bi'akrai, and you drank it just by the by, then it's mutter. So for example, let's say you're on the plane. Some people drink beer on the plane. So you sit down on the plane. You're not buying the plane ticket to drink a beer. If you wanted a beer, you wouldn't pay all the federal taxes that go into your plane ticket. It's just Aroy Bakroy. You're just passing by.
Well, since you can't go to the pub, then maybe you would.
So that's the din in the Shulchan Aruch. It's mutter when it's Aroy Bakroy. I'm on my way home from work, and I'm not going to sit down at the bar. I'm just going to grab a drink. But if I have a date every Tuesday with the guys at a particular bar, Shulchan Aruch says, that is an iser. It's a no-go. It's a no-go. It's a din midrabanan. Wow. So Sfardim are going to have a... It's like prohibition. But the Ramah, Ashkenazim, says Ramah in the small letters, v'yesh matirim. And there are some who are matir. V'sheichar shel dvash. When it comes to date beer, u'tavuah. And grain beer. Where does he get this from? He gets this in the parentheses. Usually when they give you the parentheses, that's going to be the source. It's the Mordechai. We've quoted the Mordechai before. We quoted him last time. Mordechai ben Hillel, 12th century Ashkenazi, who says that the Gemara's prohibition on Shechar was talking about Shechar Tamarim, and says the Ramah at the end, V'chein noagin b'medino selu. And so we practice in our countries. So if you are Ashkenazi, the Ramah says, you can drink beer, no problem. Anywhere, anyhow. So far, so good.
Good.
Well, not finished yet. As we now transition from beer to tea and coffee and other things, says the Chochma Sadim. The Chochma Sadim was written by Rabbi Avram Danzig in the 18th century in Vilna. He writes, on the top line, and again, you have to know whether you're on this level of piety or not. I'm not necessarily a man of great piety, but different people have to know where we're makil and where we're machmir. We should always try to make sure we have a balanced approach. If we're machmir in one area, it should be reflected with our stringency in other areas. But if we're radically machmir in one area, and we're very makil, very ignorant and lenient in another area, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So I'm not saying that this is necessarily going to be adopted halacha l'maisa, but I think it's interesting to think about. Says the Chochmas Sadam, he says,
we should drink only Coca-Cola.
1 second, we haven't gotten that far yet. Let's read what he says, then we'll decide what we think. He says, "Ve'ein limchos biyadam." The people who want to drink beer in the bar, that's okay. Ki yesh mekilim. There are those who are lenient, like we saw from the Rama in Krakow. Avol, he says, "Roy l'chol bal nefesh laharchik mizeh." A person who is one of piety should distance themselves from this. And then he says on the next line, "V'kol zeh b'sheicher shemotzvi," with the beer that's common. And I'm not going to put down contemporary applications of this, but I think everybody knows themselves and knows the circumstances that going to a bar is not necessarily the most conducive to Torah values in a Torah environment. Now, it doesn't mean, he's not saying it's also to go to a bar if you have to have a meeting of some sort, you're getting together with somebody, but to go to a bar, maybe that's not the best way to watch the game or whatever. But now, he suggests something very interesting. All of this is talking about the beer. Avol yayin tapuchim, apple cider, vishar peros, and other drinks. Mutar, it's mutar. Why? D'dover she'eno matzoi lo gazru. The rabbis never prohibited drinking orange juice and apple cider. V'kein, and I'm now on the third line. You see what he spells here in Yiddish? Yeah. Kava. What's kava?
Coffee.
V'? There you have it. Hot chocolate. Mutar lishtos beves hagoy. Okay?
You have to give us a caveat before you do these.
However, not so simple. Not so simple. The CRC is not, this is way before the CRC. He says, ach, who is he quoting? He was quoting the Pri Chodesh, an earlier Achron. Bavonaseinu harabim bismanazeh. Kama kilkulim ba mizeh. There's some tragedies and travesties that came from this. Ubefrat lishtos kave im cholov. Especially if you're talking about drinking coffee with milk. Shu isru gomor, which is an isru gomor. Remember, you're talking about a separate isru called cholov akum, non-Jewish milk, which today in America is not so common because we have Rav Moshe's chapter that talks about regulated milk in the industry, etc.
In Europe, it's still a big problem.
But in other places, it's a problem. Says the Chochmas Sadam, he says, wait a second. I've seen in my day, in the 18th century in Vilna, people drinking coffee in coffee shops, and it's led to all kinds of things, all kinds of too much involvement with non-Jews. Milvad sha'ayidei zechas v'sholom bo'en lidei znus, too much frivolity, kayadua al-kain. He says, "Kol asher bo reach Torah." Anybody who has the smell of Torah, yarchik mizeh milichnos lebotayim lishtos eizem mashke sheyiyeh, should stay away from these places in general. So therefore, the Chochmas Sadam of Avram Danzig is suggesting. He's suggesting that if you want to drink Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts coffee, drink it at home. Don't drink it in the coffee house. So is this the common practice? I don't believe this is the common practice, although I do know some who are stringent for this, and they won't drink coffee in Starbucks, not because of what the CRC points out, the kashrus issues, even if you're in an instant Starbucks, you know, where they're not making tray food in the background. His point, which again, even if we don't observe this halacha l'maisa, I think it's important, it is instructive in our worldview, is that whatever we do, we have to constantly be asking ourselves, what is this doing for my relationship with God? How does this relate to myself as a spiritual growing person? So everybody knows that the different contexts and different times, different places are different. Whether or not we should adopt this chumrah of the Chai Adam from 200 years ago in a contemporary setting in Starbucks, I'm not a posig. I'm not going to tell anybody what to do. And I myself don't drink coffee, but I drink hot chocolate. And here he says beverish that on the books hot chocolate is mutter, but somebody who has reach Torah should be careful about this. The later poskim do not accept this chumra of the chayadim. The Prima Gadim, I think, quotes it, but it says they make her adin is mutter. But I thought it was an interesting, instructive idea where we take the original concern that being out in the world drinking coffee in a non-Jewish setting with non-Jews, we have to always be conscious of the filter, no pun intended, of information and influence that's going from one place to the other. It doesn't mean that we don't interact with non-Jews. It just means we have our perspective on. Yes?
Does the Shulchan Aruch get... I understand what you're saying. We all do. But if, and I'm not saying I'm the paragonist, but if we feel comfortable with ourselves and we trust ourselves in terms of not intermingling or having this dancing or intermingling with the goyim, where does the Torah value our own self knowledge of what we could do and what we can't do? Does everything have to be halakha, or can we be guided by our own intentions?
So I think there are three levels on that question. The answer is yes and yes. So, well, it's going to be broken into three components. It's going to be broken into three components. On both sides of the question, the answer is yes and yes. On some level, there are laws, and those are across the board. And lo plug rabbanon. The rabbis did not distinguish. There's a classic Gemara in Shabbos which says the rabbis made a decree, which is why, historically, I think the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says when the rabbis used to make a decree, they would conceal the rationale for 12 months. Because they're dealing with Jews, and every Jew is going to say, oh, that doesn't apply with me. It's not relevant to me. So the rabbi said, let me tell you the way it is, we'll tell you why later. Because the Gemara says in Shabbos that they had a rule, they used to study, obviously, by light of a lantern, of a candle, and the rabbis made a decree, you're not allowed to study Torah on Shabbos by the light of a candle. Because the concern was, well, if you're engrossed in your learning, you're going to tip the candle. So the Talmud records a story that one of the rabbis said, oh, come on, it doesn't... It's not going to happen to me. And one Friday night, his learning goes, and he tilted the candle, and afterwards he said, you know what? I realize this is why the rabbis put it down straight. They just tell you the way it is, and I don't have to think that I'm smarter than them. So on one level, there's a low plug rabbanon. On a second level, part of this notion of distance is that sometimes we know ourselves and sometimes we need healthy safeguards because we think we know what's good for us, but we don't. That's, I think, a second thing to consider. Sometimes we think we know what's good for us. We think we know where we're going to end up. And then all of a sudden, we find ourselves in a circumstance and we're very compromised. I was just speaking to somebody yesterday who was talking about someone who is not from the Jewish tradition, but Mormon, and they said that they have a rule they're not supposed to work on Sunday. But they said that, what was the din? They said they'll only work if it's very important. And what happened, Lebasov? They work every Sunday.
Always important.
So there's some element that the rabbis pointed out that we think we know ourselves, but it's very healthy to have an outside set of infrastructure, just like with the laws of Taras and Mishpacha and many other things, where you have a set of rules that I think that I... But then, maybe not. But then the third... Excuse me. My cell phone was on. I apologize. But then there's the third, which is yes. This is a good example. This Chachmas Sadam is a perfect example where we leave it up to the discretion of the person. What does it mean, Bal Nefesh Yachmir? It means, I'm not going to tell you. The Shulchan Aruch does not tell you what to do when it comes to this, and there are many questions like this in the Mishnah Berurah, where we will say, Baal Nefesh Yachmir. Well, what is a Baal Nefesh? What is somebody who has a very sensitive religious soul? It means that they have a very high level of self-awareness about their religious conduct and their place, and they know where does this fit in with their religious lifestyle. And then they have to choose. It doesn't say in the Shulchan Aruch, that's what I'm saying, at the end of the day, does it say anywhere in Halacha that I am or am not allowed to drink hot chocolate and Dunkin' Donuts? It doesn't say. There's no din. But when you look at the sources, it gives you the, at least I think, by putting all the sources on the table, it gives you the background, the knowledge to say, okay, where am I? What is the circumstance in which I'm in? And how do I make that decision? So I can always speak for myself. I know myself. I know the context in which we live. I know the Dunkin' Donuts here on Dempster. So for me... Maybe I'm making a mistake, but I think that there's it's not going to be appropriate for me, or it's not necessary for me to be machmir not to drink hot chocolate with my kids in Dunkin' Donuts on a Sunday morning. But would I feel the same way about going to a bar? Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe, and this is where every person needs to know themselves. Maker at the end, it's mutter for me to go drink beer in a bar, but is that really the environment where I want to be found? If I'm going to go hang out with my friends, maybe I shouldn't go to a bar. Maybe there's a difference. And this is exactly where the person's personal perspective is going to difference. I'm going to feel differently. I'll tell you straight. I'm going to feel differently about drinking coffee in Dunkin' Donuts versus drinking in a bar. Right? You know, you're drinking in a bar. Who knows what else is going on? Different bars. You know, there's the Yesh Bar Kazan. There's a different. So this is an example of where the more you're familiar with the sources, you can make a better informed decision about what's appropriate. If it's against the Shulchan Aruch, there's no Shaila. But there are many things in life that are not against the Shulchan Aruch or in favor of the Shulchan Aruch. They're just left open to your discretion to identify what's appropriate.
I think, though, that the rule should differentiate between meeting with one person or meeting with more than one person. Because if you're meeting with one person, different types of discussion might come up, which I presume the law is trying to obviate.
So I would say that that's probably an accurate. I don't know if we would legislate that distinction, but I think that would be an important contribution in having guidelines. These guidelines that you're talking about, this is going to be every person knowing their circumstance. If you're going to meet a colleague over a business lunch, that's going to be different than going to meet, I don't know, some
mistress.
Yeah, that's good. There you go. There would certainly be difference. That potentially could lead to Averis. Okay, yes.
Yeah, I think this has nothing to do with coffee or hot chocolate or anything else along that line. So, I mean, you could say, okay, I'm not going to go to the butcher because I may be buying an expensive cut of meat and there's people in there who are poor and they're buying cheaper cuts of meat and there's going to be something because I'm out and I have to make these decisions because I'm out. It has to do with being out in society, whatever it is you're doing. I'm not going to go to a salad bar because the coffee doesn't mean anything, and the beer doesn't mean anything.
So that's accurate, with two caveats. One is the rabbis understood that food connects people. Mm-hmm. People connect over food. So therefore, they identified this as a clear area of concern. That's point number one. But point number two is, yes, if I'm an observant Jew, I'm going to spend my entire life wearing halachic man glasses. That means when I go to the butcher shop, I am going to worry about what I buy. The Gemara says in Moy Katan that they had a funeral crisis in the time of the Mishnah, that very wealthy people were, they didn't have in the old days what we have today. They were buying very ornate caskets and having very expensive funerals. And the Gemara says that the aniyim, the paupers, would not bury their dead. They would run away because they were so embarrassed. So you know what the Gemara says, Rabbi Gamliel, who was from the patriarch, who was from the Nasi, Rabbi Gamliel, he instituted that he is going to be buried in a plain, simple casket. And he told everybody, his funeral, plain, simple casket. From then on, everybody's buried with a plain, simple casket. Mm-hmm. So that's exactly the same idea. So the concept that we're going to use the teachings that we have to inform how we live is exactly
right,
this idea.
Extrapolate from. That's the
idea. So there's one level, which is the strict din in Shulchan Aruch, where we say, Meikar din, the beer is mutter for Ashkenazim. But it's going to help us shape our worldview.
All right. I thought the issue is the owner of the bar. If the owner of the bar is Jewish, then it's a Jewish establishment. You go to slice.
So that would be true also. If it's a Jewish bar, so then the whole din of Sheikh Arakim.
He's not working there, the Jewish owner. He may not be working there.
So that's also a good question. What if the owner is Jewish, but the proprietor, the person who's selling it, is not Jewish? So there's a very nice safer on this.
Who makes the beer?
So that's also a question.
Starbucks is owned by a Jewish guy.
Yeah. But he's not operating every Starbucks.
Anyway, these are important discussions, but we could have a whole shiur on Sheikh Arakim. Okay, we're of course tight on time. But I'll summarize 8 and 9 outside. Now that we've transitioned, we talked about water, we talked about beer, now we've talked about coffee. Is it mutter to drink in a Starbucks? Well, the CRC says you have to worry, number one, about kashrus concerns. What's going on with the kalim that are being washed in the back of the kitchen if they're making sandwiches there? But number two, we saw the
Rabbi Chochmas Sadam makes us aware of the social context, especially in light of that book. He's correct. This, what's his name? Tom Standage. That the coffee and the tea that we're drinking in these places has an effect. The shayla that comes up in the Achronim into context of coffee and tea is, what's the bracha Achrona for drinking tea? So that source is 8 and 9, which I'm not going to read inside because of time constraints. So we know that you make a bracha rishona shahakol yevidvaro when you drink a beverage. The shear of a beverage is a revius. Now what's a revius? That's something about between 3.3 and 4 something ounces. That's a revius. So that's relevant for the Dal Kosos at the Seder. It's relevant for Kiddush. It's relevant for a lot of things. So one of the things that's relevant for is how much do you drink to make a Bor Nefashos. But here's the thing. You drink, and then you make a Bor Nefashos, but when you drink tea, you sip your cup of tea. Well, is that called drinking a revius? We know that when it comes to eating, for example, let's say at the Seder, if I eat one bite of matzah, and then I take a nap, and then I eat another bite of matzah, and then I take a nap, and I eat another bite of matzah. So I ate a kazayas of matzah, but it took me an hour and a half. You're not yotze. That's not called achila. It's not called eating. You have to eat your matzah in one sitting. Now, how long is one sitting? So the Gemara says it's kedei achilas pras. Pras is a certain amount of bread. So there's a big debate. Is that 2 eggs worth of bread, 3 eggs worth of bread, how long does it take to eat an egg? How big is an egg? There's a big range. Let's say somewhere between 2 and 9 minutes, something like that. That's in terms of bread. So the question is, well, what's the same thing about drinking beverages? How long do I have to drink beverages? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes two opinions, a machlokas in the Shulchan Aruch. One opinion says that it's the amount that it would take to drink a beverage, a revius. So it doesn't mean I have to drink it in one shot, but let's say I'll take one gulp and then a second gulp, and that's it. But if I'm sipping tea or coffee, so how long does it take me to drink my cup of coffee? It takes a little while. So according to the first opinion, I would not make a borei nefashos after my cup of coffee, because it took me a long time to drink it. The second opinion says, no, it's even though it's a beverage, the amount of time to be considered one drinking is the same amount of time that we had for the matzah, which is, let's say, 2 minutes or 4 minutes or 9 minutes. So here's a good question. If it's going to take me 5 minutes to drink my cup of coffee, so do I make a bar nefashos afterwards? So it's a machlokas. So the Mishnah Berurah suggests, he thinks the best thing to do, and I know this for myself for hot chocolate, sometimes you're drinking, and then at the end you have a whole bottom of your glass or of your cup that's cold, basically. So what does he suggest? He says you can get out of all the problems by drinking the last 3-4 ounces in one shot, and then you're safe. Other than that, it's a machlokas aposkim. That's what the Piskei Tshuvas, which is like a Likud Sefer. I remember when I was in Keren B'Yavneh, the Rosh Hashiva used to say that when he used to go to visit Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, Zichron Levracha, the Rosh Hashiva America's a Rav, he said every time he was giving a shiur, it was a whole production. Why was it a production? Because they would bring him a cup of tea. But he didn't want to get into the Suffolk Brachas, the Bar Nefashos. So when they would bring him a tea, he would always see if there was a banana. So he would have a banana so he could make a Bor Nefashos on the banana. But he was very careful. He didn't eat the banana because it says that in the Gemara that it's not nice to put something in your mouth and then take it out. It's not nice. In the times of the Gemara, they thought that eating a sandwich, taking a bite and taking it out is rude because it doesn't look nice. You put something in your mouth and keep it in your mouth. So they had to get a banana and then they had to get a spoon because he only ate a banana with a spoon because he wouldn't eat the banana putting it in his mouth and taking a bite. So I remember he used to say it was a whole production every time we would give a shiur. So it was the cup of tea with the banana with the spoon. I know to this day there are some people who don't eat pizza with a just eating it in their mouth. They eat it with a fork and a knife because you know there's like the whole Cosby routine about... What's that?
Donald Trump. That was...
I didn't know this.
There was a whole big thing with Donald Trump that he was not one of the people when they were talking about him running for president. He was not one of the people because He eats pizza with a fork and a knife.
There you go. You know, there's an episode of The Cosby Show where he's making fun of Theo, how he's eating the pizza and the cheese is over here and the slice over there. It's burning his mouth. And that's not so yefeh. You know, like the pizza's over here and the cheese is over there. Anyway, so there are two opinions. So in the Pisgei Tshuvos, he quotes in the Mishnah Berurah, he says that the Minhag HaOlam, the Mishnah Berurah says, is not to make a Bar Nefashos. However, he says there are many Rabbanim who do, and they suggest that because that's the norm, the way that you normally drink coffee and tea, therefore you make a Bar Nefashos, it's a different shear. So I would guess, we usually have a principle, when in doubt, when it comes to brachos, when in doubt, leave it out. That's the rule when it comes to brachos. Suffolk brachos lahakel, because brachos are a rabbinic institution, and the name of God, saying the Shem Hashem for no reason, that's a potential isa daraisa. So when in doubt, leave it out. I would say if you're drinking a cup of tea, either leave a little bit at the end, or have someone bring you a banana with a spoon or whatever else. Okay, with 5 minutes to go, we're going to get to breakneck speed now. We've talked about beer, we've talked about coffee. What about schnapps? What's the story with schnapps? What are the halachas regarding schnapps? So the Shulchan Aruch says in Hilchos Shabbos in Siman Reish Ayin Beis in Source 10 that b'makom she'ein yayin matzui yesh omrim shemekachim al sheichar v'shar mashkim. There are some who are of the opinion, some machlokas rishonim, can you make kiddush on anything other than wine? So it's a machlokas rishonim. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Yeshomim, that you can make kaddish on shechar, and shar mashkim chutz min hayayin, and other drinks excepting water. The Rosh Paskins, this is only the Yeshomim Shein Mekachin, Ula HaRosh, Balayla lo yekaddish ala shechar, ela ala pas, Ubaboker yoser tov lekaddish ala shechar, Sheyivarech olav shakol. Let's say a person's traveling, and they have no grape juice, no wine for Shabbos. So what should they do? So the Rosh, and this is how we paskin, Friday night you should make Kiddush on Challah. Shabbos day you should not make Kiddush on Challah. You should make Kiddush on beer, or what the Gemara calls Chamar Medina, beer of the state. What is Chamar Medina? It's the local beverage. The local beverage. So how do you define, what is that? Oh, we'll get to Coca-Cola in a second. How do you define what is the local beverage? So, we'll get. So one more very important halachic work. It's a summary of the Shulchan Aruch and then some. It's by the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michel Epstein, whose original name was Benaviste, before he came from the Sephardic tradition, he moved to Nevardic. He was the rabbi of a shul in Nevardic. He used to sit in the shul, Rabbi Epstein, and people would just come and ask him questions all day and all night. And when people weren't there, he was writing this multi-volume work called Aruch HaShulchan. He was around the same time as the Mishnah Berurah. Somehow the Mishnah Berurah became more popular, Aruch HaShulchan is not. But the Aruch HaShulchan, one interesting thing is he's acutely aware of the Minhag HaOlam, of the way people practice. Why? Because he was a pulpit rabbi, so he was sitting there interacting with all the people, asking them, so what are you doing, and what are you doing? So they came and asked him all these shilas. So he comments, the Mishnah Berurah has a discussion, what's called Chamar Medina, beer of the country. So he suggests it's the thing that most people drink. However, the Aruch HaShulchan here, he says, wait a second. All these discussions about drinking wine, he says this was all very good for people who lived in Talmudic times, where, by the way, they drank wine because the water was polluted. Who was going to drink water? It's like you look, Nebuch, you look in these third world countries, there's all kinds of discussions about what's going on in Haiti, where the water supply is polluted. You can't drink water in these places. So they drank wine. It was clean, and it stayed. That's one of the reasons somebody observed that in the poskim in the times of the Talmud. Now I'm on a digression, but I think it's interesting. There's no discussion in the classical poskim about using grape juice for Pesach. Became a discussion the last 100 years when Kedem came out with grape juice, and they said, "Can you drink grape juice for Dalet Kosos?" So some poskim or Moshe said no, and other poskim said yes. So why wasn't this discussion in the times of the Talmud? They know about grape juice. The answer is that when do you harvest grapes?
Well,
in the fall, right? In the late summer and in the fall. When do you have Pesach? By Pesach, it was wine. They didn't have any pasteurization, and they didn't have any means of storing it. So by definition, they never had any grape juice. So it wasn't the Shiloh. They only had wine. So that's also why they drank wine so often, because wine was something that stayed. It didn't need to be refrigerated. They just kept it, and it got better as it aged. Anyway, so to make a long story short, it's now 10 o'clock, and we've got to go next door for the brunch. What can you do? Food calls. The Mishnah brewer here discussed, the Aruch HaShulchan says, yeah, but in our communities, he's living in Novartek in Lithuania, says, we don't have any wine. Who has vineyards? You know what we have a lot of? We have a lot of schnapps. We got potatoes. So they made potato vodka and schnapps and other things. So the Mishnah brewer, living at the same time, in Source 11, he says, V'imcha v'vlo yayin saruf. Yayin saruf is schnapps. If you love yayin saruf, the end of the first line on the 11th source, Yachol akadish alav bayom lechatchila b'minina senu shu chamar medina. He says, in our tradition, in Poland, what's everybody drinking in Poland? We're drinking schnapps. So that's called chamar medina. Now, two things. Number one is some people are opposed to this because they say that schnapps is not a beverage. It's not something that you drink to quench your thirst. So that's one opposition to schnapps. Okay.
Opinion too.
Right. It could be in the Mishnah Brewer. If you were living in Novartek, when you came over at the end of the day, you were thirsty, you drank schnapps. But now here comes an interesting debate. Maybe some people here hold like the Mishnah Brewer. He says, Yizoyer, you got to be careful. Likach kos marzik revius. When you're drinking your Kiddush on schnapps, you have to have a full becher that holds a revius. And v'yishte v'lishtos mimenu mole lugmov, shu rov revius. You have to drink a shir, which is a cheekful, rov revius. So you got to drink at least a couple ounces of schnapps when you make Kiddush. You should make sure to drink a full, have a full cup of schnapps and to make Kiddush. So some people are like, we should do that chumrah. That's good. I like that chumrah. But wait a second. It's a good question. How could it be that people take a glazel of schnapps and make Kiddush on that? It's not a shir. You know, for a kosher bracha, you need a shir of a revius. How'd you get a glazel out of that? So there was a Galatianish Rav, a great gon. His name is Rav Sholem Mordechai Shvadron. So he was the namesake of the Maggid of Yerushalayim, Rav Sholem Shvadron. So Rav Sholem Shvadron, who died maybe 20 years ago from Yerushalayim, his great-grandfather was known as the Marsham. Rav Sholem Mordechai Shvadron, he wrote multi-volumes of tshuvas from Galicia. So he has a tshuva about this, and he says, look at all the rebbes. He quotes in Source 12, I gave you this tshuva of the Marsham. I couldn't find it. It was missing in the edition that I found, the printed edition, so I had to give it to you from the Bar Ilan. He says, what do you mean? They went to the Rav Shitzer, and he told his students that you can make Kiddush on a glazel of schnapps, a small cup. Why? And he quotes also from the Chassid, from Kaminka, etc. He says the reason is because since the derech to drink schnapps is with a shot glass, it's not like wine, which is a regular beverage. Memela, these poskim assume, he says, that's the derech lishtoso and sagi bekiddush bekima. Says the Maharsham, already 150 years ago in Galicia, you can make Kiddush on a small cup of schnapps because that's the derech. The Mishnah Brewer is not happy with that. He says you should go for the Mahadran, you should get a big cup of schnapps. But if you want to be maker like the Maharsham, so yesh al milismoch. We didn't have time today to talk about Coca-Cola, just al regalachas. You can see the tshuva on the last page. Rav Moshe Feinstein, he rules that you may not count Coca-Cola as Chamar Medina, and therefore, even though he would be lenient to allow Havdalah, specifically for Havdalah, we didn't get a chance to talk about the distinction here, Havdalah, the difference between Havdalah and Kiddush is that Havdalah, we allow more Chamar Medina, so we're for sure on Kiddush, you couldn't make Kiddush on Coke. Rav Moshe says for Havdalah, you could make Kiddush, you can make Havdalah on beer. He says, B'shas Hatzchak, if you don't have beer, you can make it on tea, on coffee, orange juice, milk. Again, not ideally. But, he says, Coca-Cola you can't.
Oh my God.
Coca-Cola you cannot. Yes, the tshuva explains why Coca-Cola is not. And the last section, which I wasn't even going to get to, that's the list of things I put on the bottom of Source 15, the different things that are relevant to wine. Wine really needs its own shear. You talk about a kosher bracha. It's relevant to the nazir. What about stam yenam, non-Jewish wine? Drinking wine for an ovel, the Gemara in Ksubas. Simchas yontov, drinking wine. Wine when you have a shira, like at the Leila Seder. The special bracha of Atova Meitiv, and then al pi drash, you talk talk about Noach, you could talk about Lot. Wine really needs its own shear. But I think this is perhaps a summary of Halachic Man's view of the six glasses of wine. Shikoyach. Amir Hashem, we'll talk next week. Shikoyach. Israel first became a state.